You're listening to the Nature Connection Show on Natural Health Radio with Sarah Turner of Essentially Flowers Training and Moonflower Essences. Your weekly connection direct to the heart of nature. Welcome to today's Nature Connections show on Natural Health Radio. My name is Sarah Turner. Today is a very special program. All of our programs are always special, but today is one that sits beautifully in my heart. The program today is dedicated to all the animals that live on this planet with us, and also to the elemental and devic energies that also grace our planet and give us so much beauty. As we acknowledge their presence as beings that live alongside us on this earth, we respect and honor them as equals on this planet, and also gives us the ability and the awakening in our minds and hearts that communication with them is indeed possible. And to help us understand that today, I have a very special guest, Anna Breitenbach, who is a professional animal communicator. Now, many people have already met Anna through her wonderful documentary, The Animal Communicator, which you may have seen. Whether you have or whether you haven't, you're going to love meeting Anna, and it's very deeply humbling listening to her and to the awakening that she's allowing in so many of us as she shows us how that we can talk to animals and indeed all species on this earth. The program is also dedicated to two animals that have taught me so much in my life, both cats, domestic cats, one who I had the privilege of living on side called Marvin, and another who I had the privilege of knowing as a Flower Essence client, a beautiful cat called Barney. And I'm going to be talking to you about Marvin and Barney in the second half of the program and sharing with you what they taught me about how flower essences can help animals. So let's get started. I'll be back after the break, where I am going to be talking to animal communicator Anna Breitenbach. You're listening to the Nature Connection Show on Natural Health Radio with Sarah Turner of Essentially Flowers Training and Moonflower Essences. Your weekly connection direct to the heart of nature. And welcome to today's Nature Connections show on Natural Health Radio. My name is Sarah Turner, and I'm really delighted to have a very special guest on today's show, animal communicator Anna Breitenbach. Anna is a professional animal communicator, and she's been practicing for over 12 years in South Africa, Europe, and the USA with domestic and wild animals. And Anna's speciality is interspecies communication. Welcome to the show, Anna.
Thanks, Sarah. It's really great to be here.
And thank you for taking the time to be with us today, because I know how busy you are. Now, many people have already heard of you because of that extraordinary documentary that went out just at the end of 2013, I think. Was that right?
Correct.
Yeah, and maybe people haven't heard of you and will be able to track this down and watch the documentary. If you haven't seen it, I really recommend that you do, because it's going to touch your heart deeply. So, Anna, you work, clearly your passion and your heart lies with communicating with the animals and helping us understand them better and vice versa. How did this happen for you? How did this start for you? Was it a special animal that brought you to this place?
It was a very unusual out of left field start for me, and no accident on the word left either, because I was very, very left brain, logical, working in the corporate world, and had always played out my passion for animals by spending my free time volunteering, whether it was at a vet's practice during my high school vacation time, or volunteering in conservation education programs and so on in my adult life, or wildlife rescue. But my day job and my mind was very strongly occupied in the analytical world. And so it was completely unexpected when I began to experience some things intuitively in ways that I couldn't explain cognitively or logically. There were two instances that happened very close together that awakened me to this. And the one was while I was poring over footprints in the mud in the US where I was living at the time. I lived in the Seattle area for a couple of years and decided to do my tracking training, as in learning to follow footprints in the sand, and didn't have a clue what North American species were or how their footprints might look, because I grew up in South Africa, my home country. And I began to get information seemingly directly from the track, you know, brief mental images or senses of the animal's body or how big they were. And the stuff I was getting in the non-five sensory ways kept on proving to be true. It would turn out to be exactly that kind of animal later on as the story unfolded from the landscape. So for at least the first 10 or 20 times, I put it down to just having had extraordinarily good luck and having had lucky guesses all the time. But after the 20th time, I thought, wait a minute, you know, I know a thing or two about probabilities, and this was getting ridiculous. And within a couple of weeks, I found myself back in South Africa for a Christmas holiday. And I was in a very crowded living room, Christmas time, about 20 family members there. At the far end of the dining room, the very elderly and arthritic cat was trying to make her way down from the sideboard to the floor. And it was very obvious to everyone and anyone that she was arthritic and sore. There was no telepathy required for that. Mm-hmm. However, because I was on the far side of the room from her, didn't want to blurt out something verbally to a room full of people, I just silently in my mind, in a genuine spontaneous moment of compassion, I found myself thinking towards her, gosh, you know, Kitty, where does it hurt? Where on your body does it hurt? And two things happened. I immediately felt pain in my joints, and she physically whirled around, scanned the room, all 20 people, fixed her eyes on me, stared at me, and I had the sentence fall into my mind, did you just say that? Mm. So she'd completely honed in on who in the room had directed a thought towards her, and moreover, she had responded with her thought. Of course, not in English. That's my brain's internal translation process. Mm. And because I was then amazed at what had happened and in my own thinking about it, I guess the connection was broken because I took myself away into a thinking space. Nonetheless, it was very stark and a real opener. And these two experiences combined made me research the field out of resistance to accepting I might be going completely loony. And I luckily therefore discovered the whole field of interspecies telepathic communication and then chose an institute in California in the US called the Assisi International Animal Institute. And over the next couple of years, I used my vacation days to study various courses to advancing levels with them and to do my case studies and so on.
Wow. Well, I love your story. I love the humanness of it because it really gives everybody inspiration, doesn't it? And I know you say this yourself, we can all do this.
Absolutely. It really is the blueprint of how our brains are designed. You know, we all somewhere along the line descend from ancestors who were perhaps hunter-gatherers or just living in healthy relationship with the earth and the other inhabitants. And our human brains are designed to work this way. We just forgot as modern humans. We've just had a great forgetting and a great disconnection. And so the only good news about that perhaps is that it's very easy for us to reawaken our natural intuition again. This is certainly not some technical mumbo jumbo or complicated, you know, method or technique. It doesn't require huge lengthy esoteric studies because we're not learning anything new. We're just remembering our other ways of knowing.
Mm. Wonderful. Wonderful. And you mentioned how disconnected we are, and yes, we are. And isn't it beautiful how reigniting this very natural way of communicating with our animal brothers and sisters, that we actually reconnect back in that process because they are connected usually much more than we are.
They really are. And as my tracking and wilderness mentor, John Young, points out in his work, he says that when we reconnect to animals or to nature, we reconnect to ourselves as well. It's immensely heart-opening. And the third aspect of reconnection that happens is that we reconnect to community, and not just human community, but what you're alluding to. We connect to the fabric and the web of life, and we can experience flow and relatedness again, which is a fabulous way to be fully alive and fully present as animals are in their natural state.
Even our domestic pets, and I know that from having sat with my own pets, we can connect back into a different reality, can't we?
Absolutely, absolutely. They help us with that very often. They do great good for us in our lives, aside from the obvious, that on these more subtle realms as well.
Yeah. So, and I know we can maybe touch on this as we talk today, but I know from reading more about you that your work is, as we said at the beginning, is interspecies communication. It's not just about talking to animals. It's about you also talk to nature. Is that am I right in thinking that?
Very much so. In fact, I think the whole field is called interspecies communication, partly because it's not even necessary for humans to be involved. It's happening out there in nature the whole time between different species. Mm. Between the wild animals who just intuitively know which plants to go to if they've got a tummy bug or a parasitic infection, and between different individuals of the same plant species, between individuals in the collective of a beehive and even, you know, the plants that they forage from, and the elements as well, of course, the waters and the winds. So there's so much that's going on in this web the whole time. And we humans are the sort of latecomers to the connection, or hopefully coming back there again. Mm-hmm. So yes, on the workshops that I run or the places where I'm trying to help humans join the party and collaborate again with nature, it often is beyond the animals. It's about, for example, working with one's vegetable garden, much along the lines of the famed Findhorn Foundation in Scotland, who 51 years ago was founded on exactly this form of telepathy with the nature spirits, with the Davic level and the collective consciousness of certain species, and with the individual worms and birds and lettuce leaves. And so it's such a lovely integrated web to be involved with as a human. We're just one player. We're certainly not at the top of some imagined self-declared hierarchy of importance or intelligence. And so it really is about us as a human species connecting again into the communication that's very alive and well and vibrant in the natural world.
Wonderful. I can feel my whole body responding to your words with great joy. So, and I do feel that 2014 is a time when all of this is going to become much more talked about and known.
It seems to really be the time. It is the time. And that's why I'm so grateful that the documentary, which is just very simply titled The Animal Communicator, I'm very grateful that it has moved people to try this at home and to do this themselves. Because this is the time for people to step forward again without any academic debates about tipping points or climate change needed. It's pretty obvious on an experiential level to anyone who's breathing air or drinking water, you know, what's happening on the planet. And it comes down to what we as an individual can do, not in the activist or grander scheme, but really, how are we relating to our own backyard and to our own pets and to the plants that we're growing? How are we relating, and what can we do to be in better flow and communication with nature?
So this is a perfect opportunity, really, isn't it, too? Because many people listening, I'm sure, today have a relationship with an animal, or even if it's not their own pet, have the way, because we can all look outside our own windows and instantly connect with the animal world and the plant world around us. But let's focus a little bit on our pets. Can you talk to us a little bit about the health and wellness of our pets, and how we as humans can help beyond obviously taking them to the vets when they need to go?
Yes, there's so much that animals can take on behalf of humans, or even reflect to us, you know, on the disease level, perhaps, let alone all the behavioral issues that professionals in this field encounter that have causes that are not at all to do with the animal themselves. They may be contextual or to do with the home environment, to do with emotional traumas or interbeing dynamics. So there's so much, and it is often so complex. And the paradox is that this form of connecting is so incredibly simple. There's that English expression, you know, straight from the horse's mouth. And what I love about my work is that I can just go directly to the animal and ask them what's behind what they're doing or what they're feeling. To just literally go straight to the source of themselves and ask, you know, what's making you do this? Or how do you feel about that? Whether it's how do they feel about moving home or a new addition to the family or what's making them nibble at their own paw and create a sore. We can just go straight to source without having to worry about all that human projection and analysis or behavioral interpretation or dog psychology or training or anything at all. We can go straight to directly knowing from the animal using telepathy, which is a two-way sending and receiving. So I do want to point out it's not like doing a psychic reading on an animal in some disconnected way as a third party doing a reading. It's actually a present, a two-way conversation, much like any human verbal conversation between two people. There's a sending and a receiving, and the animals can just as well ask us questions, which is sometimes very refreshing as well. So just on the daily level, we can ask our pets how they're doing, how are they feeling, how might they need their food improved, or how are they feeling about family dynamics, and that's how we collaborate and get to live in harmony and cooperation.
You're listening to the Nature Connections Show on Natural Health Radio with Sarah Turner of Essentially Flowers Training and Moonflower Essences. Your weekly connection direct to the heart of nature. Quite a few people have asked questions that I'd like to pass on to you as we talk, and this one is very relevant to what we're talking about now. Jeanette, who lives in Colorado, asks, how can we begin to hear the true voice of our companion animals better? And she fears that when she speaks to her own animals that there's, and I understand this totally, that she is maybe guessing or projecting onto her animals. So could you maybe talk us through, is there a centering exercise that we need to start with? Do we need to do anything to start with? And maybe you can answer Jeanette's question as you tell us about that.
Sure. And by the way, it is always the most difficult to telepathically work with our own animals for two reasons, much like what Jeanette's alluding to. Firstly, we're very emotionally invested in their answers for obvious reasons. And secondly, we know so much about them already. In fact, we've probably been telepathically connected with them already. We just put down what we know about them to being, you know, familiarity or logical, whereas I'm sure it's been us picking up their thoughts and feelings as they do ours. So to have new information stand out on the landscape, you know, intuitively from our own animals is very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't help the mind or trust. So what I do recommend is to actually at first start practicing with animals you don't know very well. Okay. And tell your friends or family members that you are just practicing and want some example, you know, animals to work with, because there's much less pressure for oneself. Yes, the first step is to go quiet. In fact, that's an absolute prerequisite and almost the only thing that needs to happen. And by quiet, I mean a quiet mind. So no soft music, not even a specific yoga practice or anything at all, but literally bringing ourselves present, just sitting quietly and bringing ourselves present, which doesn't mean the mind is going to shut up, because usually when we try to go quiet is exactly when the mind begins its antics of wanting to interfere and take control. So let it be. As Carl Jung says, what we resist persists. So it's no point trying to fight off the random thoughts or self-criticisms that might come. But one of the best ways that I know how to become present is to do what's called mindful breathing. And mindful breathing is a practice from the East, from the Buddhist areas, and it's a presencing practice. Again, it's not a yogic breathing technique or anything at all. We don't alter our breathing. We simply sit still but busy our minds with watching our natural breathing rhythm. And it's a very a very good trick to essentially give the mind, who insists on being busy with something, giving the mind something to do that we're doing automatically anyway. It's like saying to the mind, seeing as you really want to be busy, just run along and watch my breathing. Mm-hmm. And anyway, breathing and feeling our core and feeling that we're breathing stillness in and breathing out any concerns or self-doubts or stresses, that really does deepen our relaxation and our openness. And once we feel fairly calm and centered and present, the next step and the second step is to simply intend to connect. We just have to direct our intention, thoughts-wise, towards the one that we want to connect with, regardless of whether they are physically in our presence or not. In fact, it can often be a very, very bad idea to be sitting in front of an animal whilst connecting with them if you're going to be doing something like staring into their eyes and freaking them out, because animals have all sorts of completely appropriate reasons for not wanting to be stared at, to not experience that kind of intensity. It's not about eye contact or facial expression. It's not about body language. Be in a separate room from the animal, or even have your friend send you a photograph, or just bring the animal to mind if you know them already. By bringing them to mind and intending to connect on the quantum level, your thoughts and so on will reach them, because that's what you've intended. It travels in the quantum level, on an energetic level, and it's not hampered by distance or obstacles between the two parties communicating. The very next thing to do after intending to connect can be to just open up with a lovely general question, if you don't have specifics, something like, "Well, show me who you are," or "show me what you would like me to know." And then come back to being present with one's breathing and simply notice what very subtle things may happen on the internal landscape. Perhaps words will subtly come to mind silently, perhaps brief snippets of mental images, or even a smell or a taste or a texture or an emotion or physical sensation. There's no right or wrong way to receive information. Just allow it to happen naturally.
Wonderful. So it's very easy to do, isn't it? Very, very easy to do.
Deceptively easy. It's so easy that we try to complicate it and think it can't be happening.
And I love as well the way that you've embraced the fact that we can do this even if the animal's not with us, because it was going to be one of my questions.
Very much so. Most of my consultation work is remote.
Well, it's part of what you do, isn't it? It's the part of the communication, which is...
Yes.
It happens in a way that doesn't need our physical presence. Wonderful. Well, I'm sure that has helped a whole many, many people listening to actually just be brave and to listen in a different way. And I know from my own experience of doing this, we often get answers that are, you have no doubt at all that it is the animal speaking to you, but then it's not usually what you expect to hear.
Yes, yes, exactly. And those are the best moments, because
yes,
when we receive surprising information that we know our mind can't generate it, then we're sure it's intuition. And it doesn't mean that the other times we're getting information that we might have expected, that it's not happening intuitively. Of course it is, but our mind manages to talk ourselves out of it. Mm. But the surprising ones are the best, because then we have those validating experiences. And that's why I do suggest working with animals you don't know very well, particularly pets, because then there may be a human who can corroborate some of the answers you're getting. You could even try to create some sample questions of the animal about things that can be corroborated. Things like, you know, what do you eat out of, or what do you drink out of, where do you sleep at night, and just see what you get, and then check with the animal's person what the animal's reality is back at home. And it's a great way to get the validation that builds confidence, because all that's really needed is us believing in ourselves again and building the confidence in our intuition.
And that's kind of fun, isn't it? I can see that appeals to the human mind.
Yes, it does.
Give ourselves some little tests.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So can we talk a little bit about as well about our animals? And obviously this applies to all animals, but if we focus on our pets for now, how they are so affected by depression and grief and possible, I don't know if anxiety is quite the right word, but many of the emotions that we feel, they also feel. So if they lose somebody that's dear to them, whether it's another animal, brother or sister or companion or somebody that's in their family, or if they move, or they don't have the right conditions for whatever reason, they can have these very tangible feelings, can't they?
They absolutely do, and they're very aware of what's going on, including our thoughts too. Yeah, so whether we are thinking about something that directly affects them or whether we're just caught up in our own dramas mentally or our own upset, that's leaking out of our being in invisible ways, invisible to us anyway. And that those things are leaking out of our being on an emotional and a frequency and wavelength level, and they are picking up on that the whole time. And very often they're absorbing that like sponges as well, purely out of care for us. And very often animals will absorb more than is good for their well-being, for their, you know, for their health, including physical health. The other thing about domestic animals is that, unfortunately, they've learned a lot of bad habits from humans, not even habits, but just, you know, neuroses and psychoses. It's even a fact that no wild animal has ever been diagnosed with cancer, only domestic animals. So that says a lot about the environments we're forcing them to live in. And the matter of environmental toxins is another consideration. Our domestic pets live much closer to floor level, obviously. And if we're not paying attention to what we're using for cleaning our carpets or our floors or what chemicals we're putting down the drain, which we shouldn't be doing at all, quite frankly, we don't even know how we are affecting animals. The whole pet food industry, it's driven by the same kind of machines that run the pharmaceutical industry. And the pet food industry, all the grain in dry, you know, pet food pellets and so on is causing so much itchy skin and eczema in amongst domestic animals as well because of all the byproducts and the additives and the grains in particular. So there's a whole host of physical threats to their health that we put them in front of. And then there are the layers of the, you know, emotional stuff that they're dealing with as well. Of course, all animals are sentient beings, fully self-aware beings. They can have cognition, they can reflect on the past and know about the future or have a concern for the future, as present as they are. What amazes me about animals, though, on the positive side, is that they always know what they need for their healing. Even if they have never in their own particular individual lifetime come across that particular healing modality or medicine, they always know what they need for their healing. And all I can put it down to is that they are somehow tapped into this universal library of all knowledge or just into the collective wisdom. And I've had animals directly ask me for particular flower essences, or I've got a mental image of a particular crystal that looks a certain way, and 3 weeks later I find such a crystal in a shop somewhere and then discover that its properties, the flower essence or the crystal, are exactly for the malady that the animal has been coping with.
Wow.
So they know, and this is one of the most empowering things we can do for our animals, is to ask them what they need to be healthy and what are their choices. With matters to do with healing, medication, intervention, surgeries, and even the ultimate around euthanasia or death or dying, we can literally put the decision back in their paws and ask them how they feel.
Yeah, it's very empowering, isn't it? And very beautiful, very beautiful.
And it's very acknowledging. It's very acknowledging. It acknowledges them and their power and their self-determining rights that they have.
Yes, it's interesting. I have a very good friend called Alice who lives in the States who works a lot with animals. And I've heard her talk about this as well, is that how animals actually do have their preferences for healing. So it's wonderful to hear. Yeah. So I've got some other questions that have come in from listeners, if I can ask you these.
Sure.
Kellyanne asks, and Kellyanne's in Argentina, what is your most memorable experience with an animal? I don't know if you can single one out or if you'd like to choose one to share with us. And I know there's actually probably one that I can think of in your documentary.
Well, there is that, but I'll leave that for people to watch if they want to. If they just go to YouTube and Google, well, look up, I guess, just my name, Anna Breitenbach, or Animal Communicator. There's a short 30-minute excerpt on YouTube. The whole documentary is not available online because the people who own it have not distributed it online. So I won't repeat that story, but gosh, there's so many memorable ones. I really couldn't single anything out. I remember one of the ones that was very surprising to me. was a domestic cat I was called in to chat with because this 8-month-old ginger kitten was playing very roughly with the people in the house. A mother and her daughter lived there. And he was never retracting his claws when playing. So the obvious request and the reason they were having me speak with him was to ask him to be more gentle and to pull his claws in when he was playing, which I duly did by sending him a mental image of him pulling his claws back in. To which the cat promptly retorted, "Well, why should I? You know, you humans don't retract your claws." And I was blown away. That was definitely one of those cases of an unexpected answer that could only have come from not me. And I realized that from the cat's perspective, which, you know, he had no reason to know human anatomy, from the cat's perspective, he was seeing fingernails as claws, and they were uncomfortable to his body as well. I then looked and noticed that this mother and daughter had very long manicured false fingernails. So I ended up explaining to the cat that we humans can't, we literally cannot withdraw our fingernails into our fingers. Whereupon his retort was, "Oh, well, that's a silly design," which I must agree, I had to agree with. However, he at the same moment had a sense of compassion for us because, you know, we're a bit clumsy and can't do that. So he had compassion for us and a little bit of pride that he could retract his claws. And from that moment forward, he did exactly that. He retracted his claws every time so as not to hurt the humans.
Aww.
So that was one of the funny, memorable ones for sure.
That's beautiful. Very beautiful. Yeah, lovely. Thank you for sharing that. It's
pleasure.
I'm sure a lot of people relate to that as well.
Yes.
And Kellyanne has also asked, and I think we probably know the answer to this one listening to you today, have animals communicated with you regarding the changes on our planet?
Yes, yes, they have. They're very aware of what's going on, both locally, right, you know, in their specific environment, as well as globally. I do dolphin workshops off the coast of Mozambique in southern Africa with wild dolphins. And although they are in a marine protected area, they are very well aware of and therefore comment on what's happening to dolphins in other parts of the world. And they comment on the lack of health in the oceans and the lack of food and so on. So they're very aware of what's happening on the planet. And particular groups of animals or individuals are obviously suffering incredibly at the hands of humans and are therefore in a lot of despair and grief and despondency. At the same time, there's almost a spiritual quality of acceptance on their part. And it doesn't mean they are being passive about it or just are completely fine with it being so. And it doesn't mean they're not suffering on the emotional and practical levels. But their sense of compassion and holding and witnessing of how us humans have lost the plot is quite amazing. I mean, even on a practical level, I'm quite amazed that all the large animals in captivity, you know, the big cats and the elephants and so on, haven't just trampled or bitten people to death, which they surely could in any moment. Yeah. And there's a great sense of compassion for us humans and a sadness for us as well as for themselves. So they do know what's happening, but they don't have the same attachment to longevity in their physical life on an individual level as we humans tend to. I do find that all animals, domestic or wild, truly see death as a transition in a state of being instead of the end of everything. And that does nothing to, it doesn't negate survival instincts and all of those very appropriate physiological things, but it does bring to the non-human animals a certain wisdom, and that's why I say almost a spiritual quality of acceptance and presence and being with what is and just doing the best they can.
So there's no particular advice coming through, is it, or is it just well, the sense I get is that they are asking us to be present.
They are. They're asking us to be present and to respond appropriately to help live better.
Yeah.
So, you know, their obvious request would be for more food or more space, really. So there's those practical levels. But really what they're asking is for us to wake up. That's the overriding theme of what they're asking.
Very profound, yes. Okay, thank you. And I've got one more question, which I think you have touched on, but let's address it specifically, and I'd love to hear what you say as well, because it's my passion. Susie, who lives in the UK, asks, how do you communicate with flower spirits?
Exactly the same way. One simply just would get out into the garden or wherever the flowers may be, or not. Again, one doesn't need to be physically in the same presence. And calm yourself, become quiet, and direct your intention to whatever level of nature you want to communicate with. It could be the Devic level, it could be the flower spirits for all sunflowers, or just that one sunflower. So it could be collective or individual. It's just about going quiet so we can access our intuition and our inborn connectedness that's always there. We just don't notice it. So exactly the same techniques. You may find, though, that if it comes down to thinking about what questions to ask aspects of nature, those are very different than what we might ask domestic animals. You know, they don't have much to do with humans if they're lucky, flowers and plants. And so there's much less currency of exchange or stuff to negotiate about. However, it is a wonderful opportunity to ask beautiful open questions about what their lives are like from their perspective. Mm. Of a flower spirit, you could ask, you know, how do you work? Or what's most important to you in your day? Or how do you feel about others of your kind? Or how do you feel about this garden? So those more gentle and open questions to really try to tap into their perspective and their experience of their lives, rather than having to think from a human perspective into that realm.
And they love to be asked, don't they? As you said before, they love to be acknowledged.
They really do. You know, this needn't be something as complicated or intentional as telepathy even, but by just simply walking down a high street or through a garden and noticing and having a feeling of appreciation for any leaf on any plant or any earthworm in the dirt, that is connection. That is communion. It needn't be communication that looks like a data exchange, but they love to be seen and witnessed and related to.
Beautiful. Thank you, Anna. Thank you. It's been an absolute delight talking to you. Could you tell everybody how they can find out more about you?
Yes, certainly. My website is animalspirit.org, O-R-G. And there's a little more explaining animal communication, as well as some resources and previous downloads for people to listen to. The workshops I have scheduled for 2014 are already all full. So there's no possibility to book on workshops this year. However, I do recommend that people, when they go to animalspirit.org, on the front page, just sign up for a free subscription to a quarterly newsletter I send out, which will keep people apprised of interesting topics and upcoming dates as they become available. And later this year, there would be an online class offering as well. So folks are interested in perhaps tuning in with us remotely from wherever in the world they are, they could become aware of that by, again, subscribing to the newsletter, and they will in due course be told as those dates become available.
Wonderful. Well, again, thank you on behalf of everybody listening today. Thank you on behalf of the animals, of all the plants and all the beings that you touch the lives of and help touch us with. You do very beautiful work. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Shira. It's been wonderful to share this with your listeners.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
You're listening to the Nature Connection Show on Natural Health Radio with Sarah Turner of Essentially Flowers Training and Moonflower Essences. Your weekly connection direct to the heart of nature. Welcome back to the Nature Connections Show. My name is Sarah Turner and you're listening to Natural Health Radio. Today's program is all about celebrating the species that live on this earth alongside us. And when I use that word, I'm referring to the animals, to the trees, to the plants, the flowers, the elementals, all the Devic kingdom that coexist alongside us. Today's program is all about allowing ourselves to respect and honor these other beings that live alongside us, and really acknowledging the power that we all have within us is to communicate with them. So this is my work with the flower essences and the nature kingdom already. One very special area of my life that I've always had a lot to do with ever since I was a child, I was lucky enough to have pets as a child, a dog and a cat and a tortoise. And I've always loved animals, always had a great relationship with them. And as an adult, I've most of my years also had cats living alongside me. And they have been some of my greatest teachers. In the work that I do nowadays with flower essences and the nature kingdom, I found that animals respond remarkably well to using flower essences. And sometimes it can make such a difference to them. Flower essences also work very, very well with plants. And I'm going to dedicate another program to looking at using flower essences in this way. But for today, let's continue with our theme of animals. So let me share with you, first of all, just how I've learnt, what I've learnt with animals. My very first introduction to using flower essences with animals was quite a few years ago when we had a family of cats. There was a mother and four of her children who lived with us. And it was at that time, around 20 years ago, that I was starting to learn about flower essences myself. I certainly didn't have the knowledge that I have today, or more the experience is probably the word. But we used to give flower essences to our cats at that time. And because they lived together as a family, what we used to do was we used to place a bowl of water in the kitchen for them with a specific flower essence in it, and there'd be another bowl of water with no flower essence in it. And on several occasions, actually, we had several bowls with different flower essences in it. And in that way, the cat that needed the flower essence was able to drink from that bowl. Now, for many, this may seem a little bit strange that an animal would know exactly what it is they needed. But we saw with these cats that on some occasions they would go to the water bowl with no essences. On some occasions they would go to one specific bowl that had one essence in it. On another occasion they would visit another bowl. And the pattern showed that certain cat would always drink from a certain bowl, and if we changed them round again, it was very clear that there was an intelligence here, that they knew exactly what they needed. So that really was my first introduction, and this family of cats showed me that they knew exactly what they were doing. Now, it was several years later that the cat that taught me most of what I know came to live with us. So I'd like to share with you a little bit more detail about this rather extraordinary being. His name was Marvin. He lived from 1989 to 2009. So he lived for 20 long, healthy and happy years. We didn't know Marvin until he was 11 years old. He decided to come and live with us, as is often the case. And we first met him when we saw this very, very handsome, rather large, quite well-fed black cat sitting in our garden. And at the time, we weren't actually looking to adopt a cat or to bring another animal into our family. But as often happens, Marvin had other ideas, and within a week or so, he was living with us and showing us what a beautiful friendship that we were about to have with him. So for the next 9 years, we lived with Marvin, and they were extremely happy ones for all of us. Marvin began to teach me about flower essences in his later years when he started having problems with cystitis. And around the age of 18, he had a particularly bad attack, and a visit to the vet showed that he actually had some large stones stuck in his urethra, and he had to have a life-saving operation. Now, at age 18, this is not something that's usually recommended by the vets because of the anaesthetic that's needed. But Marvin, we decided to allow Marvin to choose this for himself and gave him the chance of actually going through the operation. We gave him a chance at life. So when he went into the vets, as always in his later years when he had a few visits, he used to take his own bottle of essences into the vets with him. So I would prepare him a specific bottle and speak to the vet who knew Marvin quite well and understood the work that I was doing. And what the veterinary nurses would do was that a couple of times a day that they would get his bottle, put a couple of drops on their palms and stroke him with his essences. And they also very, very kindly did this before the anaesthetic, during the surgery, and also after the anaesthetic. Now, I think you'll find my experience of working with animals and other people who've come to me for help with their animals, vets are usually very, very open to doing this for your animals. So I would really recommend that if you have a pet who is poorly that needs veterinary treatment, that you talk to your vet about the possibility. They're not actually used to putting the drops internally. They're literally just stroking them onto the fur. And my experience has shown me that this can have a really, really stabilizing effect. So much of an animal's response to this kind of thing is emotional. And they are great teachers of how, when we take care of our emotions, of our energy flows in our body, then the actual physical can really respond with great vibrancy, even in situations where you wouldn't expect it to. And Marvin was a great teacher of this. So I'd really encourage you to explore this with your vet if you can at all possible. Just a rescue remedy that you can buy. They usually are very open to doing this. So Marvin survived his 3-hour-long operation, sailed through it, and came out, was eating within 20 minutes of waking up. He then actually had to have another couple of small operations during that week to really just allow the operation to be as effective as possible. And he came home and lived for another couple of years. So for him, it was absolutely the right thing to do. And it was during this episode of his life that he really showed me how flower essences could benefit animals. And from this experience and from his life was born a small range of essences from my own range, moonflower essences, that are designed to be very, very easy to use by animals and their owners. So the essence that Marvin actually took into the vets with him to have stroked on him was an essence that was later called and is still called Peaceful Pet. Now, this is very, very useful if you have a cat or a dog or any animals. It's been used successfully with horses, with rabbits, with birds. So the size of the animal doesn't matter at all. So if you have a very nervous animal, maybe one that's been rescued, or they have to go to the vets if they have anything traumatic happening to them. It may even be bereavement in your home or moving to another country or to another house. Peaceful Pet has been shown to be extraordinarily balancing for the animals and very, very helpful for them during these transition times. The other essences in this range are Secure Pet. Now, Secure Pet, we have two new cats now living with us called Ping and Pong, and they are younger cats, and one of them in particular is very, very nervous, or was very nervous when we first knew him. And Pong has shown us how beautifully Secure Pet works when the animal is not necessarily been traumatized in any way, particularly it's not really stress that they are dealing with, but maybe a lack of security, of a lack of trust. So Pong has really shown us how Secure Pet can work within minutes and enable them to be more trusting and feel more secure in their environment. There's also an essence called Positive Pet, which is wonderful for animals who are depressed. It's not normally an emotion that you would associate with an animal, but if Marvin actually showed us the need for this essence when he was recovering from surgery at home, and it took him a few weeks really just to get back to normal and to recover to his normal, bright, happy self. So that's when Positive Pet may be very useful. And the last essence in Marvin's range, and they are called Marvin's Strong Heart range of essences, was Senior Pet. Now, Marvin helped me create this essence in the last few months of his life, and it's gone on to be a very, very useful essence to help animals just live the last few days, months, even years of their life in a very graceful, dignified way, just to allow them to be as peaceful as they can be, and in that space to enjoy those moments together and to allow, and it's in those peaceful, quiet moments that we are able to actually hear their requests and to really just acknowledge their wishes at these final stages. So that's Senior Pet. It can really bring some quality back into any senior years. Now, you can buy these essences if you're interested from my website, moonfloweressences.com. And if you'd like to see a photo of Marvin, then please pop onto the Natural Health Radio site and you will be able to see a photo of him. On my moonfloweressences.com site, there's also a section on animal stories, and you can read about all the animals that I've had the privilege to work with flower essences. And in that vein, I'd also like to talk to you about another animal that I've had great privilege to work with, another cat called Barney. Now, I only knew Barney when he was 17 years old, and like Marvin, he lived a very long and very happy and healthy life. In fact, like Marvin, he lived to the age of 20. Now, Barney was, at the age of 11, lost his sister, whose name was Ruby, and shortly after he's lost his sister, he began to experience epileptic type fits, which his owner took him to the vets for. Now, the owners didn't want him to be treated with medication, so they just brought him home and they learned to live alongside the fit and knew how to keep him quiet and treated him very gently and very naturally. And Barney did very well with this. At age 17, however, the fits started to really become more of a problem for him. And when I met him, he was having fits several times a day, which was very distressing for him and clearly very distressing for his owners as well. So we began working not to work with the fits per se, because this is not how we work with flower essences. We don't address the physical symptoms, but we look at how we can improve the energy flow in the animal and to keep them as calm and as stable as possible. We also look at their environment and how the environment can maybe be modified or improved or enhanced in order to make it easier for them to live there. So with Barney, he had different ways of being treated, and Barney taught us basically how to do this for him. We started off with a rescue type blend of essences. Now, they were a special blend. They went on to be called Barney's Blend is what they were called. But they were special essences to bring him out of his nervous system was obviously in a very heightened state, having experienced fits for so long. So it was really to calm his energy system. And within a few weeks, we began to see the difference, and the fitting was much less frequent, and also when it happened, it was also he recovered more easily. And within a few months of continued treatment, he actually went from having several fits a day to just occasional ones. So how this was done with Barney, and his owner was very much part of this, there was a special bottle that a couple of drops were placed on his food a couple of times a day. He had a special essence that was stroked into his fur when he did fit, which actually enabled him to come back into his body more easily and therefore recover more easily. Now, Barney taught us many things during this time, and one of them is how intuitive animals are, and they know exactly what they need. And it just so happened that Barney's owner had purchased a lovely blue trailing plant that sat on her decking. And she noticed that every day Barney would actually go outside. It was the summertime, and Barney would actually sit under this plant. And we have a photograph of him. And again, please look on the Natural Health Radio site to see a photo of him. of him sitting underneath this blue plant. It was an isotoma plant, tiny little campanula family, tiny little blue flowers. And he would sit right under it so that the blue flowers would actually trail around his head. Now, at the time, it was sweet and it was cute. It was photo worthy. And then we started looking at exactly what Barney was doing and researched the plant a little bit and actually discovered that from an energetic point of view, what this lovely blue trailing plant was doing was calming his higher chakras, and actually, because of its trailing nature, was actually grounding this energy from his head, from the higher chakras, into the earth. So Barney was actually treating himself, and he knew exactly how to do this. So we made an essence up from the isotoma plant. And so for times when he couldn't sit under this plant, which were for many months of the year, when it wasn't flowering or when it wasn't, the weather wasn't suitable, Barney would take the isotoma plant internally as an essence. It would also be stroked onto him. And he carried on taking these essences right up until the end of his life at the age 20. Now, the next year, when these particular plants don't live through the winter, so the next year, Barney's owner went out again and bought another one of these isotoma plants and with great interest placed it again on the decking, and Barney did exactly the same thing all over again. So again, it showed us that animals know exactly what they need, and that left to their own devices, they are able to not only treat themselves, but also communicate to us exactly what is needed. So like Marvin, Barney taught me so much about how an animal's life can be helped and enhanced by using flower essences, and how we can actually start to build into their life energetic supports from the flower essences. Barney, in terms of his location, his basket was moved away from power points in the house in case that was upsetting him. He had a special spray of essences, which his owner would also spray around to keep his environment very clear. So again, if you're working with your animal, you can also use flower essence sprays very, very easily, just to spray around their bedding, maybe around their litter trays, around any areas in the house that they like to inhabit. If anything traumatic has happened, or if they've moved, or if there's a new family member, or they've lost a family member or one of their animal family, then you wouldn't want to actually spray the animal themselves. They probably wouldn't enjoy that very much. But what you can do is actually spray the area when they're not around. So to treat animals with flower essences, you can put a drop in their water. Now, some animals don't mind that at all. Barney and Marvin didn't mind that. But some animals may not enjoy the brandy that goes alongside with the flower essences. So what you can do in these cases is put it on their food. We've found that it works extremely well on food. Even if you actually put some more food on top, it still works very, very well. And also what you can do is allow the animal to decide whether they prefer to have it stroked on them. So you just put a couple of drops on the palm of your hand, rub them together, and then stroke the animal. Most of the time, animals absolutely adore this, and you can see straight away how relaxing it is for them to actually have this treatment. They fall asleep, they change their behaviour very, very quickly if they've been very stressed. So allow the animal to choose whether they prefer to have it stroked into their fur or placed internally. You will find out very easily, and you will just know intuitively what the animal loves. So I hope that's been helpful to you. I do offer personal consultations to animals. So please come onto my moonfloweressences.com site and you can find out more. It's been a great program. It's always a great privilege to talk about how essences can help animals. They do need a lot of help nowadays. And essences are a very safe and very affordable way of doing this. So I've enjoyed talking to you about this today, and I look forward to joining you again next week for another Nature Connections show. Many blessings to you, and I hope those of you in the UK are staying warm and dry with all this very severe weather that we are having. Okay, I'll see you next week. Goodbye.